Hi, I'm Scott Mullett, and I'm here at the beautiful Woodmark Hotel along the shores of Lake Washington in Kirkland. We're about to sit down with all seven of our city council people to find out just a little bit more about each of them. Please join us. Bob, thank you very much for coming here today to do our 10 questions for city council people. We're going to start off with, they kind of start off a little easier, and then they get more in-depth and introspective. So
okay.
we're going to build on it. That's
okay.
We have a very dramatic sense here with
City
of Kirkland Television. So we're going to start out with, who is your favorite fictional character?
John Galt.
Okay. Why is that?
A fan of Ayn Rand and certainly a very much a believer in that ideas are what motivates the world and motivates industry and business and even government. And I just find that he is a fictional character who is very real to me,
mm-hmm.
Especially in today's environment where there is a struggle sometimes between ideas and pragmatism and things that would make the world go maybe a little better than they do. Sometimes you have to look at maybe less is more, which is what John Galt basically said, is I'll take my ideas away, and others will take their ideas away, and we'll see where the world goes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we'll get some people's attention.
Mm-hmm. So in within John's character, are there certain aspects that you really would that you emulate yourself? You see yourself in there a little bit in any sense of that character itself and you?
I don't necessarily see myself in that, but I certainly understand, especially when it relates back to what I do as a city councilman, that mm-hmm. it's important to take into account everybody's ideas, everybody's thoughts, everybody's opinions, no matter how different they may be from mine. I was told before I ever was sworn in by a former city councilman that I really always admired,
mm-hmm.
to listen. That was his advice. Listen.
Yeah.
Do not walk into a meeting having your mind made up. Do your research. Make sure that you have it down cold. And then listen.
Mm-hmm.
And see what happens. And it's surprising sometimes listening to people either on the council or the council members or people in the public that come up and speak. It's an interesting idea. And that goes into my toolbox and certainly goes into my thought process for mm-hmm. how I make decisions.
Yeah, they talk about the art of listening is a lost art.
two ears and one mouth, and there's a reason
why. That's right. The numbers should be on the listening, but boy, that one mouth tends to win, doesn't it?
Exactly.
All right, this is one of my favorite questions here, and not that you necessarily have to do it, but do you have any hidden talents?
Oh, I have lots of hidden talents.
Great, let's hear them.
Well, not so hidden necessarily. I used to race cars.
Okay.
Professionally,
mm-hmm.
I did that when I was a young man. I'm a motorcycle rider. Have been since the age of about 14.
Mm-hmm.
I fly airplanes.
Oh.
I can't sing, even though I come from a family of some people who could sing, including mm-hmm. my late father. I think that I've got a hidden talent of comedy. I think people would sometimes maybe not agree, but generally I try to find humor in most any situation, and so that's kind of a little bit of a hidden talent.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In terms of on the comedy side, have you ever gone and thought about doing an open mic type night or something like that?
I've thought about that, uh-huh. and years ago I did that.
You did?
Yes, after a couple cocktails, I think. I don't do karaoke, so I do stand-up comedy.
Good.
But maybe in the future I may consider doing that.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that I like doing. I'm comfortable in front of people,
mm-hmm.
comfortable in front of an audience. And I certainly see the irony in life that most people that are in comedy do
mm-hmm.
see. And I think it's important, especially relating back to city council things. Sometimes probably your greatest attribute is a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And being able to convey that maybe things aren't quite as serious, and that maybe we should lighten up a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Any comedians in particular that have been more influential than not for you? And you know,
Robin Williams, just because of him being really off the wall, mm-hmm. Love the way that he can bounce from voice to voice, subject to subject, and just do it on the fly. Mm-hmm. That's an art. That's a real art. Probably others that I would say, just because they had really good writers, Bob Hope, even though you may have heard the same joke over and over, George Burns, some of those people, George Carlin certainly, mm-hmm. Just because of the way that he turned life around, his perception of life, mm-hmm. and what was going on, and turned it into something that, yes, we see every day, but we didn't look at it that way.
Right. Well, and the Bob Hope in your comment with George Burns too, it was, even though you might have even known the joke was coming, their timing was always impeccable, mm-hmm. and the way they could just subtly hit that punchline, and you know, Johnny Carson, I think.
Even Johnny, like that, who didn't write his own material either, but mm-hmm. had the ability to put it together, both in terms of the delivery and as well as his facial expressions and his timing, and knowing when to let the audience react.
Right. My favorite on Johnny Carson was when he told a joke that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And how brilliant he would be. He would say, El Bombo! And just make fun of it. And it was funnier almost when he told jokes that didn't work.
And, and I'm sure that whoever wrote that joke was cringing after that, because he knew that even though Johnny got a laugh, it wasn't for the joke.
Yeah, that's right. It was for Johnny. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I actually met Johnny Carson once up at Roche Harbor. I uh-huh. pulled in on his boat, and I'd always been a fan of his. I'd been to his show live several times when I was in Los Angeles. And very quiet man, mm-hmm. And was very cordial, very appreciative of being recognized, which I don't think that was a problem for him, but very, very nice. So that was certainly nice to meet somebody like that.
The understated Midwestern charm.
Exactly.
That always worked well for
exactly.
Johnny Carson.
Yeah.
So you mentioned Roche Harbor. Most interesting vacation spot you've been to?
Most interesting vacation spot.
Could be one
I've
or two.
Been
we don't have to.
To
single one.
Probably Italy for the history, for the places that I was. I was in the countryside rather than in the big cities. Mm-hmm. Milan, I was in. I've been to Rome. Been to Florence, but I was in the northern kind of the wine region, the Piemonte region. Mm-hmm. And just the rolling countrysides and reminded me a lot of here, mm-hmm. a lot of green. My other favorite place is another place that I spend a lot of time in this state, which is Lake Chelan. Mm-hmm. I spend an awful lot of time over there. And also up in the San Juan Islands. I'd say that having cruised there first with my father on his boat and then later on boats that I've been on, mm-hmm. It's always special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my family in the summertime, in the wintertime we have no problem so leaving to the warmer, but in the summertime mm-hmm. we tend to stay here in terms of, you know, whether it's San Juan, you know, mm-hmm. Roche Harbor, we've stayed out there and are going to some of the spots in eastern mm-hmm. Washington. It's amazing how much Washington has to offer.
An awful lot, and certainly once you get over the other side of the Cascades, and I fly it normally over to Chelan. Once you get over the other side of the Cascades, it's a plateau.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And it's flat all mm-hmm. the way till you get over into Idaho. Mm-hmm. So always interesting, and probably one of my greatest views that I ever get, and most people don't get, is flying over the Cascades at 1,000 to a couple thousand feet over the mountains, mm-hmm. and seeing the alpine lakes and just things that people will never get to even travel to. You can't get there. I suppose you could in a helicopter.
Right.
Or if you crashed your airplane.
Yeah, it wouldn't be,
probably wouldn't be as much
from
fun.
That subject, right.
Yeah, it'd be a good story, but not as much fun. But just the sheer beauty of the area that we live in, mm-hmm. and the appreciation that you don't get at eye level, that you do get when you're above it, and you certainly wouldn't get from a jetliner. So I'm mm-hmm. very fortunate to have had those experiences.
Mm-hmm. How often do you fly?
I fly Generally, I try to fly a couple times a week at least. There have been times in the last couple of years where I've flown 4 to 5 times, and I've made 3 to 4 trips over the Cascades. And I do it year-round, do it in weather that is not conducive to ducks. But I will go over the top. And the nice thing about the other side of the mountains is that there's sunshine a lot of times, or at least it's clear enough that you can land, or you can get down through the clouds without too much of a problem, and then you're in good shape. Coming back, it's always, even in the summertime, you never know what you're going to hit. So always interesting.
Yeah, well, you can almost guarantee that, you know, most of the time when you come this way, you're going to be hitting clouds.
Clouds and ice. There's about 40 miles of what they call the ice maker coming westbound on the route that I usually fly. And you can hit ice up to above my flight levels easily. Uh-huh. And it's because the weather shoots off the Puget Sound and shoots up the mountains and super cools. And there's ice, and it goes, it's amazing.
Yeah, ice is not the airplane's friend.
It's not the airplane's friend. It does cause you to wonder why you do these things sometimes.
It causes me to know why I'm not doing it, yes. this is, I don't know if you ever have seen the program, The Actor Studio, but he has 10 questions he usually does, and we threw a couple in here. This is one of those.
Okay.
What sound do you hate?
The klaxon. The klaxon. It's a horn that goes off. I guess best characterized by maybe a loud alarm clock with the most annoying. It's not a high pitched, but it's a very it's the kind of thing that you hear like if there's a nuclear attack or something and the alarms are going off.
Tsunami warning.
That's basically it. It's not a siren, but it's a klaxon, and that came from a job that my father gave me when I was a kid of doing some drilling on a drill press, and it turned out that the phone or the alarm for the phone going off when someone was outside was this klaxon, and it was right above where where I was drilling, and every time the phone would ring, no matter how many times you knew, I mean, you never know when it was going to ring, but certainly every time you would jump, and so that's probably my least favorite.
You still hear that one in your sleep?
That's the sound and the low fuel in the airplane warning.
That's
one of the ones you don't like hearing.
I don't even like hearing that in my car. The airplane would be even worse.
Yeah.
If you had one thing you could take with you to a deserted island, you're on a deserted island, you're stuck, there's one thing you can have, what would that be?
Maybe
we'll give you 2 or 3.
That was way too easy.
Let's say your plane has no fuel.
Well, the plane has to have fuel.
You landed there.
Actually, this was a management dilemma that I was given once in a management program was in. And what it was they said, if you landed on a desert island and all you had besides your clothes, whatever you were wearing, was the pop top from a can, and we were told to come up with all these different things you could use with a pop top. That would probably be it, because we came up with some pretty good ideas. You know, how to make fire by rubbing against a rock. Mm-hmm. And, you could dig something with it. You could use it as a mirror. Mm-hmm. If somebody did have fuel in their airplane was flying over, you could do that and numerous other things. You could, if you were hurt, you could do some surgery. I suppose if you found another woman on the island or someone you wanted to marry, you have a ring. Numerous things that you could use that for. You could use it to help you make shelter by being able to, maybe cut a tree using it as a knife or something like that, or a saw. Mm-hmm. So that's always stuck in my mind as one of those things. That would probably be enough to at least get you through, assuming there were trees on the island. Something that you could create some type of shelter.
Mm-hmm. I always think of when I hear that question, I think of the movie Castaway with Tom Hanks and mm-hmm. how much use he got. But the game changer I almost thought was him was when he got the ice skates.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, you know, for that question, ice skates, you know, a pop top is one that, you know, wouldn't necessarily come to mind first, but ice skates is another one that I thought it was great.
Well, I tend to be rather pragmatic and would think in terms of something practical that mm-hmm. you could really use. I suppose it depends where the island is, whether you could use the ice skates.
Well, but he was using them as an axe and the string. It was the same thing. I was thinking, I never would have thought of ice skates, but it was, I never would have thought of a pop top as being so versatile. But
The exercise, I think, really is a very worthwhile exercise because it gets people to think outside of the ordinary use of something mm-hmm. and. Certainly, those of us that are on the city council really have got to think outside the box quite often. We're faced with a number of things that it's not unlike being on an island alone mm-hmm. at times because we are elected to go figure things out with the resources we have. And sometimes easier than other times. Mm-hmm. And quite often it just really does mean that you need to look a little bit further. You know, you need to maybe squint a little bit and see what you don't see
mm-hmm,
that
mm-hmm.
you really have to work with.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you could have personally witnessed one event in history, what would you have liked to have seen?
The Wright brothers' flight.
Oh, yeah.
Some other pioneers as well, but that in particular because of what it did to the world in terms of at least starting the thought that we could get to places without going across an ocean in a boat, and the fact of how the world began to get smaller.
Mm-hmm.
And as we witnessed yesterday, the first flight of the 787,
right? Mm-hmm.
Just emphasizes how important, not just to our area, but around the world, how important it is to be able to get over to and see other countries, cultures, mm-hmm. so that we can learn and certainly in some cases probably learn things that would help us that we never thought about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It really is a situation of bringing the world together. And the Wright brothers, I've been to Kitty Hawk,
mm.
Kill Devil Hills, and it's not much, but when you go there and as a pilot, and I was there with a couple other pilots as well on our motorcycles on a trip, and you look at where you just came across a area that is at sea level, Cape Hatteras, where I wouldn't want to live,
mm-hmm.
It's absolutely amazing what those guys did and the risks that they took,
mm-hmm.
And what's become of it. So mm-hmm. that for me anyway, that's a monumental thing. My father was a pilot as well, and so I don't know that he had the same appreciation necessarily for that that first flight. But certainly being a pilot, he benefited, and I certainly
mm-hmm.
benefited.
Yeah, yeah. So. Do you look back and you say, okay, here's just been over 100 years, and here's what aviation was 100 years ago. Where do you think aviation will be in the next 100 years as a pilot and aficionado?
Aviation continues to evolve. The airplane that I fly is a very technically advanced airplane. The avionics is computer-driven, and I fly from two computer screens versus the old round or steam gauges that I originally learned to fly.
Mm-hmm.
And that technology continues to advance itself to where actually you won't even be looking down at some point. You will have a screen on your windscreen.
Mm-hmm.
And you will have less of the issues that we have today in instrument flying of looking up and looking down especially when you're trying to make a landing and you're coming through the clouds. So, and the technology that we have today, the ground proximity sensors and things are just absolutely amazing. Some respects, it takes some of the fun and some of the mm-hmm. daring out of the flying.
Mm-hmm.
The other part of that is that there are people today that will only learn to fly that way, and if something goes wrong, it will be a different experience for them.
Good luck flying on instruments.
Exactly, they aren't working, and it's happened, and it certainly happened, and so that's why they do put auxiliary round gauge instruments, at least a couple, in the airplane that they have to have, even if you are an electronic.
Right. Well, do you have a life motto?
Yes, I do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
It's actually a Latin phrase, and I'm not going to say the Latin phrase, but it means you only go around once. And it's true. I think every day is precious. I think everything that we do is precious. And you're not going to get that second back. You're not going to get that minute or that day back. By the same token, I am not a coulda, woulda, shoulda person. I don't believe in that. I can't change what's happened. And even though I wish I could in some cases, I don't dwell on that. I try and move forward and learn from whatever good things have happened and whatever bad things have happened, and even the mediocre things. But in the end, it truly is you only live once, and you only go around once. And I think it's important at least in my case, I keep that in the forefront, and I make that a part of most anybody, tell anybody that's in my life that's the way I do things. I just, I don't regret something I can't fix.
Right. Well, I'm glad we actually have a coulda, woulda, shoulda question in here, and I'm glad I didn't ask.
Well, there
that
you go. There you go. You would have gotten the same answer.
What do you think the secret is to a good life?
I think the secret to a good life is once again going back to an Italian philosopher Ferney, ignorance is no substitute for knowledge, and I try and learn something every day. I have a practice that when I put my head on the pillow at night, that I want to be able to remember something or know that I learned something today that I didn't know when I took my head off that pillow in the morning. I love to learn. I love new experiences, and it's always interesting. I suppose that I've had lots of opportunities in my life. I've had some very interesting work experiences, some very interesting personal experiences. And I've gotten to do a lot of things that a lot of people probably wouldn't normally do in the normal course of their lives, including politics. That may be one of those coulda, woulda, shouldas, but now that I think about it, but no. I like to learn. I think the internet is one of the worst things that ever happened to me, especially the search engines. Idea comes into my head and I want to learn more about it. I'm fortunate because of what I do for a living. That more and more of my clients now are looking for alternative ways to do things we've always done, or done the same way, and especially in the way of green building technologies and that kind of thing. And I'm interested in that as well. I think learning is a lifelong thing. The work that we do on the city council, it's amazing how much you learn. There's no way you'll ever know everything. I've come to that realization in my 55 years now that there's not enough hours in the day or years left in my life that I will ever get to learn or do all the things I'd like to go do. I'm not going to try.
No.
I will keep trying. That's basically is just that, the more knowledge that you have, certainly probably the happier. And certainly the more you'll understand the world around you.
I like the ignorance is no substitute for knowledge. I think it's a good life motto there, too. The other one is, a little knowledge can be dangerous. And I could be on the flip side of that one, too.
And quite frankly, quite often from a city councilman standpoint, we see quite a few people with not as much knowledge as we wish they would have on the subjects that they're talking to us about. And unfortunately, we don't have enough time in the day, nor sometimes in our lives, probably, to really educate as well as we can. And that is a big challenge at the city that we do battle. I don't care if it's annexation or it's a new tax or it's land use. Usually, There's always that person or those people that come out of the woodworks that, I never knew about this, even though it's been all over the TV channel. They've had mailings and listservs and public meetings. It's always amazes me. Mm-hmm. But after almost 14 years in city government, either on boards and commissions or on the council, that's one of the things that always, yes, a little knowledge.
The little knowledge can be very dangerous, yep. Where do you draw your inspiration now, or maybe inspires you?
Great question. I really enjoy what I do. I'm very fortunate. I live in a great city. I grew up next door in Bellevue, in North Bellevue, in the woods, and I think that my inspiration is that I do like to learn. I've been fortunate to be able to do some things in my life that have led to other things in my life. I have great friends that I've had for years. My girlfriend is a woman I've known for, I don't know, 43, 44 years now. And grew up same area and high school and all that, and been friends since. And just learning. This is a great community, and it's hard not to be influenced and motivated by the world-class brain power mm-hmm. that we have in this city. And I say this quite often, that there isn't a problem that we have here that if we didn't put the residents that we have with the brain power that we've got together in a room, we couldn't solve. Mm-hmm. And that's what drives me forward, is that I always feel that there are solutions. Sometimes those solutions may not be pretty, they may not be politically popular, but there are things that we have to go do. And if we've learned one thing in this city, change is inevitable. And I've learned to deal with change a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And it's scary. People do not deal with uncertainty very well. Mm-hmm. And we see that quite often. Some people don't want Kirkland to change. And unfortunately, Kirkland has changed. I can remember Kirkland in the old days when we'd come to Kirkland to launch our boat, and there were four boat ramps, launching ramps, downtown at Marina Park. Mm-hmm. And I know it was a big change when they went to one.
Yeah.
And people that moved here a long time, moved here even 20 years ago, wouldn't have known that. Mm-hmm. You know, but people that were around 40, 50 years ago would. Mm-hmm. And when you look back on the history of Kirkland, it always has been a changing place. A lot of the things that we do here have come from people that were very innovative. Peter Kirk was a very innovative guy. Mm-hmm. You know, he had a dream. Mm-hmm. And I like people with dreams. And I like to follow them, and I like to see where they go. It's amazing now watching kids that my son and daughter grew up with, to watch them now in their mid-20s really go out and take the entrepreneurial spirit, even mm-hmm. in a down economy, mm-hmm. and make it happen. So there's lots of good role models here, and I always look forward to the next idea. I'm fortunate because I'm involved in economic development, both in the city as well as some regional board that I'm on as well. And I get to see some of the really, truly amazing things that you would never, ever, ever know were going on here. Mm-hmm. And I go, wow, you know, and sometimes it's, why didn't I think of that?
Right.
You know, and there's other times you just have to sit back and just admire. Mm-hmm. And hopefully motivate them as well, and give them, at least in our city, a good opportunity for success.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great segue, talking about the city and where things are going, to our final question, which is, if you were to look ahead 10 years from now, what would your hope for Kirkland be? Mm-hmm.
Well, when I ran originally 4 years ago, my first election, I've been elected twice. I filled an unfulfilled two-year term the first time. Mm-hmm. I was asked that question. I would like to leave the city a better place than when I was elected the first mm-hmm. time. The real answer is, as I've learned more about what really goes on here and what it takes to run not only this city, but my involvement with the Suburban Cities Association, the board mm-hmm. of that, and the different growth management policy board I'm on, and other things, that The key to the future is sustainability in all sorts of senses, not just in the environmental sense, but truly in the economic sense and in the vitality sense. Kirkland's at a crossroads. We've now voted to annex nearly double our size. I was one of the leaders in that effort on the part of the council. Wasn't an early advocate of it once I kind of started to understand some of it. But once I could put all the pieces together, it became very clear that in order to be sustainable and to be vibrant in well into the future, that we had to grow. That was an area we'd already taken the economic engine from, and the people were still here calling themselves Kirklandites, even mm-hmm. though they were in the county. And it's always interesting to me when I read a newspaper article and it says Kirkland Company or Kirkland Person, only to find out that, well, that's not really true. They really lived out in the unincorporated area.
Right. Yeah.
But thanks for letting Kirkland be, you know, sharing in your glory. But the 10-year outlook for me really has to do with making sure that what we have is sustainable. That what we do with our downtown does allow people to work, live, and play in the city, mm-hmm. And buy. Sometimes I have a real hard time with the nexus that happens sometimes when we talk about development of requiring all this parking, yet we also want people out of their cars, and we want people to be using alternative modes of transportation. For me, Kirkland really has got the character thing down pretty well. The vision is not quite as clear to me because I think it doesn't take into account the number of people that we're going to have in certain areas and what it's going to take to sustain those people. And it is going to require some give and take. Mm-hmm. We're already dealing with that with the multifamily housing and the affordable housing. We need to have a diverse community, as we always have. And I want to make sure that happens. I want to see the older people, I'll be one of those older people at some point, hopefully, that's walking along the boulevard as my father did well into his 80s. Mm-hmm. And other people continue doing. I think it's important that we get that groundwork in now, that we do the framework for that. I'm hoping with a new council that we'll be able to have some very clear discussions about where we're going, bring the public into it, as well as how we do business in the city. Mm-hmm. The functions that we perform, the things that pot of money we collect every year, this year less than than right. other years, right. and we're not sure when this is going to be over. But the lesson's a good lesson, and that is that we need to look at what it is that we do, and we need to, you know, as I said earlier, change is something that I think we have to embrace and know that there are going to be changes. And some of those changes won't be popular for everybody, but in other cases, maybe it will leave an opportunity to move in a different direction that will serve more people, and maybe in the end, everybody is better off. And that's the way I look at things. So in the long run, 10 years out, sustainability, diversity, economic stability, happy people, you know, as best as you can ever make anybody happy. And just make sure that the people that are in office at that time carry on the traditions that we've had in Kirkland and really make this place a real showcase for the east side and the region. We're about to become the 12th largest city in the state. Mm-hmm. And I was a little kid, never thought that. I remember driving past the Welcome to Houghton sign, you know, when it was still the town of Houghton.
Mm-hmm.
So. Big changes, mm-hmm. and I embrace them. I want to be a part of them, and I'm hoping that the citizens and the residents we have today, and the business community as well, will work hard to make this place truly something special well into the future.
In terms of working hard, what suggestions do you have for the citizens and business owners and such of Kirkland?
Always get involved. Always get involved. It's something that we hear on a regular basis about, I didn't know, I didn't, you know, if I would have known, I would have gotten involved. Uh-huh. The issue that we have as a council quite often is that we hear from the same people at council meetings, same people write us. The advent of the blogs has helped a little, although those are not exactly objective at times. Mm-hmm. But I encourage everybody to apply for a board or commission spot. There's a place for most everybody. We've done a good job of getting our young people, our teens involved, very proud of that. And our seniors are just unbelievable, the activities that they do and the, mm-hmm. and the input that they bring and learned input that quite often when we sit down with them, I'm amazed, as I know other council members are, and it's just because they got involved. They stayed involved. And mm-hmm. a lot of these are people that were never political, mm-hmm. But they've got the time now. And I really think that there is a place for everybody at the table. It's not that we're going to do everything by popular vote, because you can't. And there is a certain sense of trust that everybody has to have, that everybody's dealing with the same amount of information and the same quality of mm-hmm. information. But the only way that you'll ever learn anything is to get involved. And I did it many years ago on the park board, and I found that the experience was extremely positive. Being on the city council is extremely educational. excuse me, it's not for everyone. Mm-hmm. And some days I'm sure most council members wonder if it's for them. I'm hoping that you know, we can certainly move forward with the community being involved, with the council listening mm-hmm. More than talking. And that the result will be something that we can look back on, as I look back on the hard decisions that former councilors made, council members made about parks on the waterfront, and acquisition of different properties, and some of the zoning things that they did, and certainly the annexations that they did that make mm-hmm. the city what it is today. Mm-hmm. You know, I've been around a long time, and I can tell you that there are people that I run into that. I just start talking to, and I'll say, you know, why did you move here? And they'll say, that building over there. And I'll have to go into, if you only knew how contentious that building was when it was designed and was presented, you know, you would be surprised. Mm-hmm. And the response is, you've got to be kidding me. I said, no, but I don't think that's any different than any other city that we deal mm-hmm. with, that I know of or that I've ever done business in mm-hmm. as well, where I've built something. And some people like it, some people don't like it. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, Bob, that's the end of our questions.
Right? Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to come in and talk with us today. And wish you a very good 2010 with all the items on the council's agenda for the next year.
Thank you.
Okay.